and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. And Mickey, I was going to suggest to you that you soak up as much warm temperatures as you can before heading north to Toronto for the PDAC, the big mining convention that will be taking place here. But I believe you've had some snow in the Albuquerque area, haven't you?
Well, we have, but I would dare say that our winter here is probably your early spring. Got above freezing today. It didn't do that yesterday, but you know, It's not anything like what you're going through in the northeast tier up there.
Yeah, bitterly cold here, Mickey. Just the other night, about minus 20 degrees Celsius overnight with a wind chill of minus 30. So keep that in mind when you're packing, okay? So
yeah, I'm going to have to pack a lot of warm gear, I know.
Indeed.
That.
Well, maybe it'll warm up before then. We're continuing our focus on past bubbles in the commodity market, Mickey, and lessons that have been learned when those bubbles burst. This time out, we're taking a look at a bubble that you say was one of the shortest bubbles ever, and that was the bubble in graphite. Just how short was it?
Well, it was pretty short. I'll give you a little history before the bubble kind of got going. I started looking at graphite through in late 2010, and it came through one of my subscribers who had speculated in a startup graphite company, and he was certain it was going to be the next big thing, and it was briefly. So I started looking, but in late 2010, there were two graphite explorers listed on the Venture Exchange, and I looked at both of them and decided I was going to kind of sit on the sidelines a while. And then in the second quarter of 2011, there was another company entered, a startup junior, and I put my dollars into that company, and it's proven to be a very good speculation. By late 2011, there was a buzz starting, and in fact, we did a show in November of 2011 on graphite called Getting the Grip on Graphite. And at that time, the price started to spike, and it essentially doubled by late 2011, 2012. Large flake graphite essentially went from $700 a ton in 2006 to $2,500 a ton in early 2012.
Wow, big growth in the price, and that resulted, I'm assuming, in a bit mushroom in the number of companies. A lot of people come out of the woodwork when this type of thing happens.
Yeah, most definitely. By the Q2 of 2012, there were 50 graphite companies, explorers listed on the Toronto Venture Exchange. And the price collapsed very soon after that. It went from $1,500 to $2,500 a ton for large flake graphite. And by early 2013, it was back down to $1,500 a ton. So essentially, the price bubble lasted something on the order of 6 months, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know of a bubble that's any shorter than that one, Mickey. What about the backdrop, the conditions that helped to inflate this bubble? Was there a sudden spike up in interest in graphite because of a growing market demand or trend in industries that would use more graphite? Or was this just pure speculation?
Well, it had a lot to do, once again, with China. At the time, China was producing about 85% of the world's graphite. And it puts on some export quotas and started consolidating the industry, very similar to what happened in the rare sector and some other specialty metals. But essentially, China has been running out of reserves through a lot of its mines are very small underground mines, and by 2014, it's been down to 70% of world production. So that was really probably the catalyst. Then the spike crunch, and you know, at the same time, it was declared a critical mineral by the USGS and and by the European Union, and so it created this buzz, and and you know, it sucked me in. I'll tell you that. By 2012, in May of 2012, I was talking about graphite as the newest next big thing. Luckily, I never put my money into anything except this one company. I took field trips in 2012 to what would be called the Big Three, and that would be a project in Sweden, which I am still invested in, and another one in Ontario and another one in Quebec. So those latter two, in fact, those three were three, the three, essentially the three original companies into the game, and one of those is now a producing mine.
Well, you're a level-headed guy. You're a smart guy, Mickey, and I believe that you look at a lot of things with a skeptical eye. I mean, it's good to be skeptical on things. You ask questions, but I think you said, quote, you were among those who got sucked into this. So that really, for me, that's a bit of an eye-opener and just shows you how treacherous this area of the market can be, this speculative junior game.
I said I got sucked in. I got sucked into the idea that it was the next big thing. Luckily, I was very cautious with my money, and I did not pile into a bunch of juniors because I understand the way these bubbles work. 95% of the companies are going to fail eventually. So I got in early. Luckily, I picked the right company. The other two companies have progressed. They both have feasibility studies now. But the graphite industry is a very small business, and it's very tightly controlled. It's one of these things where prices are negotiated between a mine and potential customers, and there's a saying in the graphite business, it doesn't matter what you can produce, it matters on what you can sell. So it's a very it's an industry that is very customer demand oriented. So essentially a potential customer comes with specifications and says, can you produce this graphite for me? And you either can or you can't. No, it's not a big market. It's about 1.1 million, 1.2 million tons a year. It has not grown over the last 5 years, despite a lot of buzz on the street about demand from electric vehicles and for lithium-ion batteries, which use a lot more graphite than they do lithium, actually. But the buzz still goes on, despite the fact of the 50 juniors that were in there by mid to late 2012. There's probably only 10 that still exist as graphite companies and have any potential ever to be viable. And I would say that likely maybe one or two of those will end up with mine.
Okay, so tread carefully. What about, now in researching this interview, Mickey, I was going to ask you about the role of advances in technology in the graphite market, because there was a buzz during the height of this bubble, wasn't there, about technological advances increasing the demand for flake graphite, and it was being used more and more as a substitute for synthetic graphite?
Well, that's the idea, but it hasn't really panned out that much. You know, the graphite market is still driven by traditional uses, which would be refractories in the steel industry and lubricants and brake linings and foundry castings. In Asia, the small lithium ion battery market has and continues to convert somewhat to natural graphite versus synthetic graphite. Synthetic graphite controls most of that high-tech market, but it's very expensive. And so there's been this idea on in the industry, especially with juniors who have something to promote, that that is the future, that eventually natural graphite will replace most synthetic graphite in lithium-ion batteries. That is probably pretty much a pipe dream for the, certainly in the short term and likely in the midterm.
Well, we've seen that pipe dream, Mickey, take the company count from 50 at the height of the bubble down to about 10 today, and you say out of those 10, there's probably only one that's really got a decent chance of surviving. So safe to say this is an area of the market that you're not going to suggest people really take a look at. There's a lot better prospects out there.
Well, I certainly think so. It's underperformed. The future does not look good. Demand's been flat. You know, there's been a lot of hype lately about the demand for batteries for electric vehicles. You know, Deutsche Bank came out recently and said they're projecting 21% annual growth of electric vehicles from 2015 to 2020, and an auto market share going from 4 to 9%. But when I can go and put gasoline into my big F-250, which gets about 10 miles a gallon, and I'm paying $2 a gallon or less for gas, you know, I seriously doubt if that electric vehicle market's going to pan out. You know, speculators tend to get enamored with the projections for higher demand for any commodities and new technologies and the idea that this is going to be the wave of the future, and generally those things just don't pan out.
Okay, well, you said it nicely in the previous interview, Mickey, leading up to this one. When we're talking bubbles, the good strategy is to get in early and get out fairly quickly after that, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I got in early with one company, and I've stayed with that company. Mm-hmm. It now has a producing mine. Unlike other bubbles we've talked about, which were the rare earth bubble and lithium bubble, this commodity bubble has actually seen a couple of new mines come on. The one in Sweden, which I've referred to, and then there's another mine in Madagascar that is a publicly listed company in London. And both these mines are now operating, but neither has reached commercial production yet, although they're scheduled both to reach commercial production this year. Trouble with the graphite business, it's not a high-margin business. It's small. It's not scalable in the fact that you can't go and produce a bunch of graphite because you can't sell it. So CapExes have to be very small, certainly in the low tens of millions of dollars in order to for a graphite mine to produce and make enough cash flow to pay off the capital. So these big graphite deposits, and there are certainly some of those out there, but they're looking at $100 million to $150, even $200 million CapEx, put them in production. They can't sell enough graphite every year to generate enough cash flow to pay that CapEx back.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up on that note, Mickey. You'll soon be flying north, and you and I will be sitting across a table in a downtown watering hole, no doubt. Are we going to talk bubbles once again, another one? Do you have another one lined up?
Well, there's a couple other bubbles we need to talk about, and those are area play bubbles that have happened since the global economic crisis, and that would be Colombia and the Yukon. So I would hope that we'd be able to touch on that while I'm in Toronto, but I've got some other ideas of what I want to talk about, some other things that we may consider. I would encourage everybody, I'm going to speak about these bubbles at PDAC at noon on Sunday at the Investors Forum, and the title of my talk is A Bevy of Bubbles Blown Up and Burst. So we will go over all five of these bubbles, and then we'll talk about the latest rage, which is medical marijuana, and how that's doomed to fail.
All right, Mickey, well, let's wrap it up there. Looking forward to seeing you shortly in Toronto. It's always a good time.
Likewise, Rob. It'll be cold, but there's always lots of drinks to warm you up there. So.
Indeed. Thanks a lot, Mickey. Travel safe. We'll see you soon.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.